It's The Takeaway. And we close out our hour today with a conversation following on our coverage this week of unrest in India and here in the U.S. With growing diaspora activism against the Indian government and a push for U.S. action against India's discriminatory citizenship law, the relationship between Prime Minister Modi and President Trump is once again in the spotlight. Late last year, Modi visited the United States for what was coined a Howdy Modi rally in Texas, just weeks after implementing a wide communication shutdown in Kashmir. The event drew thousands of Indian American supporters. Now officials say that Trump will likely visit India next month for a similar town hall celebration, as social unrest continues to grow both here and in India over the country's new citizenship law. For more on how the history of the relationship between Modi and Trump relates to the current situation, we now turn to look at the political ties between India and the U.S. with Milind Vaishnav, a senior fellow and director of the South Asia program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. And also with us is Anjali Kamath, an investigative reporter at WNYC. Thank you both so much for coming on the show.
Thanks.
Thanks, Arun.
Milind, we saw such a huge turnout when Modi came to the U.S. last year. What kind of support does he have across the Indian diaspora?
So, Arun, we don't have any hard empirical data about, you know, say, what percentage of Indian Americans support Modi. But what we do know is that he does seem to enjoy broad support. Indian Americans, by and large, see him as a powerful leader, as someone who wants to propel India into great power status, as someone who has the leadership, the guts, the charisma to kind of take tough economic decisions at home. However, what's been interesting is that, you know, the Indian American population, of course, is not a monolith, and we're seeing a lot of interesting cleavages, most notably age. A lot of young people are coming out against Narendra Modi and some of his more hardcore nationalist agenda. And, you know, Indian Americans are not the same as Hindu Americans. And I think often we make that conflation, obviously, with Hindu Americans providing greater support to Narendra Modi than other minorities.
There is a paradox I'd love to explore with both of you, which is that voter surveys of Indian Americans suggest that they're strongly in support of Democrats. And even on issues like a travel ban, that they overwhelmingly oppose it. Yet at the same time, as you describe, Milind, you have this very strong support for relatively anti-Muslim sort of policies in India. How do we reconcile these two things?
So I think, you know, from the position of most of the diaspora, they're really kind of looking at a very macro view. And this is what they're seeing when they look at Mr. Modi. They're seeing as somebody who shares their view that India for a long time has been a big country, but it hasn't been a particularly important one when it comes to global affairs. And Modi really taps into this idea that India is a civilizational power that should regain its rightful place at the kind of global community roundtable. So much of the diaspora emigrated to the United States because of frustration with the lack of economic opportunity, the kind of cronyism, corruption, graft that's so rampant across India. And they see Narendra Modi as someone who's willing to take decisive, bold leadership in order to rectify that situation. And so I think, frankly, not many of them support a lot of these interventions that he's made on the social and cultural agenda necessarily, but they're willing essentially to make the trade-off saying that in the long run, we take the good with the bad, and there's more good than bad in their view.
Yeah, it's also interesting, you know, historically, Indian Americans have tended to vote Democratic by and large, even though there have always been sections that have voted Republican. But, you know, even at the Howdy Modi event that you just mentioned, I mean, I spoke to several people who had friends and family in Texas who were sort of thinking about whether to go. And one of the sticking points was even if people kind of liked Modi, they were turned off by the fact that President Trump was going to be there.
Milind, let's talk about the relationship between Trump and Modi themselves. What's the history there?
I think it's worth stepping back, Arun, to the early 2000s, which is really when the beginnings of this U.S.-India strategic partnership start to form. And so we've seen it kind of blossom under successive presidents, beginning with President Clinton, then George W. Bush, then Barack Obama, and now Donald Trump. So Donald Trump essentially is following along a path of kind of broadening and deepening this relationship. And believe it or not, people who are close to both the prime minister and the president say that they managed to strike pretty nice rapport in private when the two leaders meet either in bilateral meetings or on the sidelines of other global summits. But that's not to say that there aren't some real sticking points in the relationship. And I think one of the biggest ones is economic. This president has made trade and trade deficits a huge issue with almost every country that we do business with. And India is no exception there. And so he has been willing to put that issue really at the forefront and say, okay, well, we want to move together with India on defense, on science and technology, on economic growth and all these other things. But we really need to get this issue settled first and foremost. So that has now sort of taken center stage as a potential thorn in the side of the relationship. The issues around democratic freedoms, civil liberties, things that are being discussed and debated both among the diaspora and amongst Indians at home is not exactly at the forefront of the Trump administration's foreign policy agenda right now. And so while it does get some airtime, I don't think it cracks even the top three issues on the bilateral agenda.
Anjali, Trump has had significant business ties in India. You've done extensive reporting on this. Can you give us a quick primer on that history?
Yes. You know, the Trump Organization's largest overseas portfolio is actually in India. They've got five different projects, and they've been in India for almost a decade now. You know, their first project started in 2010. And Don Jr. has made about a dozen visits to India, even as recently as September, right before the Howdy Modi event. Don Jr. and their Indian partners had flown over 100 buyers from India to New York to come meet him and have dinner at this golf course in the Bronx. And he talked about how, you know, once his father is out of office, he'd like to continue making deals in India. But these are active deals. I mean, there are five projects. Only one of them is complete. And all the other projects are still under construction. There's a couple of them just outside the capital in Delhi. There's one in Mumbai. There's one in Pune. There's one in Calcutta. And the interesting thing is the partners they've selected. You know, all of the partners have a really checkered history with the law and a history of government investigations into pretty serious allegations of fraud, bribery, even money laundering. Three of these partners are very closely tied to the ruling political party, to Prime Minister Modi's party, the BJP.
What does this mean for people over here?
I think it's definitely raised a slew of questions among people who've been closely following the ethics about these kinds of deals and about the line between business and politics. On the one hand, it raises a lot of questions in a country where corruption is quite rampant in the real estate industry. You know, right after Ivanka Trump made a visit to India in November of 2017, you saw the permits being fast-tracked for a Trump Organization project very close by to where Ivanka visited. So you see this kind of nexus where you start to wonder what's driving what. Is it the business interest? Is it the politics? Is it the ideological interest? And then, of course, there's the big picture strategic issues that Milan is talking about, right? Whether or not Indian Americans here like that or agree with it, there is a certain section of BJP supporters in India who like that very much.
Milan, what about the broader relationship between these two countries? We don't have to go back too far to a time when Modi wasn't even allowed in America, correct?
When Modi was chief minister of the state of Gujarat, which is one of the most prosperous states of India, located in the western part of the country, in 2002, there were horrific riots which broke out on his watch, in which over 1,000 people were killed, the vast majority of whom came from the minority Muslim community. On the basis of that violence, the U.S. government decided to revoke his visa in 2005 under a, what was at that time, kind of an obscure statute on international religious freedom. So from about 2005 to 2013, the U.S. government, as a matter of stated policy, had no engagement with Narendra Modi. Now, that all changed in 2013 when it became very clear that in the 2014 Indian general election, the BJP was likely to be the single biggest party and Modi was likely to be India's next prime minister. And I think the Obama administration at that point in time did, I think, what most U.S. administrations would have done, which was they got pragmatic and said, well, we're going to have to do business with this guy, so let's start to lay the groundwork. And so Modi, after becoming prime minister, could have spurned the United States, but he chose not to. He also took a more pragmatic path. And by all accounts, he and President Obama were able to work through this troubled history. And so the broadening and deepening of U.S.-India ties from the early 2000s pretty much continued, if not hastened, under President Obama and Mr. Modi.
You mentioned the travel ban against Narendra Modi prior to becoming prime minister. That was in part the result of work by members of the diaspora here. Are you seeing right now sort of a jousting happening in D.C. and elsewhere in terms of trying to influence how legislators approach India, given all the protests that are happening right now in India?
We absolutely are. And you have to place this in a larger context. Since Modi and his party were brought back to power in the spring of 2019, they have moved with a certain clarity, a certain urgency about enacting some long-standing objectives of their kind of Hindu majoritarian agenda. And I think this latest fracas over this legislation has raised the temperature. So we are seeing intense lobbying happening on the Hill. We are seeing protests. And I think we're seeing politicians respond. Whether or not that's going to fundamentally change the trajectory of the relationship remains to be seen. I think by and large, the administration still has adopted a kind of realpolitik view that we have bigger fish to fry. But as the situation grows more concerning in India, I think we're going to see more legislators, more governors, more members of Congress speak up.
So, Anjali, Trump is most likely visiting India in just a couple weeks. What do we expect from this visit?
There's a lot of talk about how this visit is going to be about the trade deal and finally making some progress on this ground. And it will be interesting to see what he has to say about the protests, what he has to say about Kashmir. I mean, he's been making comments about Kashmir and been offering to mediate, which, of course, India has rebuffed. But it's also going to be interesting what stance he takes on his business deals in India, because this is going to be his first visit to India since 2014.
I would just say that I think that people are going to be watching this really closely, not just for the trade issues, which I agree with Anjali are going to be the primary substantive goal of the bilateral meetings. But there's this larger symbolic messaging which could take place. And, you know, frankly, if you go back and you look at the past several years of Trump's interactions with strong men, illiberal or autocratic leaders, or people who somehow violate the spirit, if not the actual rules of democratic practice, he has often taken their side. And so this could have, you know, larger reverberations. And I think we're all waiting to see how it exactly plays out.
Milind Vaishnav is Senior Fellow and Director of the South Asia Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. And Anjali Kamath is an investigative reporter at WNYC. Thanks to you both for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.